Good morning, everybody. Hope you guys are all having a great decade. My name is Srikanth, Ranganathan Srikanth. I'm a lead PM in Service Manager. With me are some colleagues of mine, Filippo Seragini, is another PM as well, and Thomas Elliman. I'm actually accompanied by Gard and Patrick, and they'll be doing some demos as well. This is the last day, but I prepared this session. Hopefully, you'll go back and review the slides if you want to go back. But there are a few labs that are not important right now. They've already been done. But more importantly, you can always reach out to me. You have my email and others. What I want to do today, I want to just share a little bit of the vision of where we are going. It's very important for us to start communicating the direction. Talk about some of the delivery commitments. And this is something that I've shared. Many people here are part of our community calls that we do every month. Some of you maybe even in our TAP, so the information here must be familiar to you. But for others, it's new information. So I hope you get to use that or come back and then share your feedback. The most important thing in service management, at least service manager, is what are the areas that you're investing, what are the areas that you're thinking about investing so that you can make your decisions on that. Lastly, this is a subject that all of us are very familiar about, or at least trying to get familiar, is where is our alignment to hybrid cloud, where is service management fit in, what are we doing about it, and that's something that I thought was very appropriate. Hence the title, and then we'll have some ideas about how we go about embracing cloud in this whole IT service management. And particularly Gard and Patrick will demonstrate those scenarios. So do you guys want to quickly introduce yourself, Patrick?
Thank you, Srikanth. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us. GridPro Software from Sweden.
Hola, I'm Gord Watts from Provence, and we're based in Canada.
This is the Microsoft Cloud and Data Center, our enterprise cloud's vision, and our goal is to actually go back and try to take the journey and help our customers make the journey to the cloud. And in that process, in particular for service manager, where do we fit in? We integrate very closely with automation. So this slide gives you an idea about how we go about thinking, how we fit into this whole process, how ITSM facilitates this embracing of the cloud. So I'm not going to spend too much about it, but this is a message that you most likely have seen it already. If not, this is the rubric in which, or the framework in which we think about how to areas to invest, as well as the areas to pivot. People are familiar with Service Manager. I wanted to just go back and say, it's been a fairly rough and challenging few years. On and off investment areas, so I want to get a sense in terms of what we have done. And more importantly, earlier in the year, I came out and I blogged about, here's how we're going to go re-engage with the community. These are my areas of priority. And I wanted to just showcase some evidence in terms of how we have performed against those promises that that we made, and also show a trend of how we continue to go back and execute on those promises. And lastly, an area is where are we going next, right? What can we do? And if you've been in, at least watching TechEd since the keynote, one particular recurring topic that will probably emerge is the faster and faster cadence. As a company, Windows Server, and different aspects of our cloud services and on-prem, they're all getting into a different faster and faster cadence, and you'll probably see some evidence of that as well. Last year, I did a lot of survey and talked to a lot of customers, actually 297 of them, in the process of going back to the management and said, these are the areas that we need to actually go back and engage with our community and invest. And with that, we're able to now go back and create a new team for Service Manager. And that's largely because after the 2012 release, we had to re-engage in the cloud phenomena, which meant that there was an on-prem product that was lacking the necessary investments. So this survey and the research helped us to go back and create a new team. And with that, it gave me an opportunity to actually go back and create a new culture and the culture for the team. And we chose to become an agile team. And that was a perfect opportunity because we became metrics-driven. And more importantly, it became extremely transparent. We had a lot of different calls with you guys using monthly link-up calls, blogs, and Twitter feeds and everything else. And the part of the culture was we not only come and in our blogging, we not only do we tell you, we also ask. And more important thing, what I found was the community came back and responded to those asks. And that was a very nice cycle of feedback of co-creation. And I'll share some of those things with you. And last but not the least, we actually said, hey, we are very committed to the ecosystem. The ecosystem here is not just the partners, it's the MVPs, the ISVs, because Service Manager is a product that actually depends a lot on the ecosystem to actually go drive. It's a very process-driven scenario. It's not just a technical solution. It requires a lot of investment. So these were the new things that I thought was more appropriate when we started to re-engage, and you'll see some evidence of that. So when I said agile, one of the things that internally what we did was we pivoted the entire team to a very backlog-driven culture. And we took everything that we knew about the product that we heard from the customers, we knew internally, and then created a backlog. If you're familiar with agile method of development, that becomes the central focus of conversation on how you execute, and we had to do that internally. And within the System Center suite of products, we were the first ones to actually do that, and we started doing it around October, November last year. While we did that, we also went and engaged with our community. I said we had a whole bunch of partners, our support staff, our customers. And when I said I talked to 297 as a sample to go get feedback, that was not a joke because we actually have a lot of different means in which we engage with our customers. And they give a representative sample in terms of the areas to go back and fix. And one cool innovation that we came up from this engagement process is every month we have this community call. The community call, actually, we throw out our backlog, our MVPs and SIs, our ecosystem. They actually prioritize what we need to fix to some extent within the constraints of what they care about, and we take that feedback very closely. And this happens in different rhythm of business of what different engagements during the week. Some of them lead right back into our backlog, and what we call is the iteration planning. Every 2 weeks, we go into an iteration planning. We take this feedback, and we spit out what we call as TAP releases. So every 2 weeks, we call it internally TAP Thursdays. And Filippo, my colleague, actually ensures that these bits show up to our TAP customers who take these bits, run it in their test environment, give feedback, and we've been pretty religious about that. And the feedback comes right back to this. And just as an illustrative example, because of the fact that we decided to embrace this agile TAP, we fixed about 15 to 20 bugs that we normally wouldn't have seen caught internally within our test framework because of the complexity of the deployments. And these people out here have helped us catch this early so that the UR updates that go out don't suffer that. And that is a very positive example of how we are able to take something from the community, retool our own engineering processes to work with the community, and give back to our UR in a very predictable cadence. And that, if it's not already evident, the rhythm of business is very clear. We have now gotten to a very stable model of every week the team knows what to do. Every 2 weeks the drop goes out. Every quarter is a roll-up of these the TAP releases. And so far we have released about 10 or 12 TAP releases and fixed close to 15 to 16 bugs purely at the giving it to the TAP community. These 15 bugs that I'm talking about would have been recall class bugs which had plagued Service Manager in the past, where we put out a UR and then we come back and say, hey, I'm going to take it back because the installer had a problem or something. And we're able to go fix them very, very early in our cycle. And this is an example of a faster cadence that I'm talking about. So net, we have a one engineering team as part of this new culture. which means that previously we used to have a test, we have a dev, we have PM, we brought all those things into a very backlog-driven, and it is every, since we took our eyes off of the service manager in 2012 or early 2013, we've also accrued a huge amount of backlog, which is both customer-facing backlog as well as an internal engineering backlog, and we now have a framework in which every sprint, every UR has a good balance of both, and we are slowly making our way out. We are investing in automation. We've retooled our engineering efforts to build faster cadence. We are producing customer value, and I'm very happy about that. I told you I talked to about 297 customers in July through August of 2013, and this is the kind of information that came out to me, right? And this is particularly important because if you see the why are we focusing on usability, why are we focusing on reliability, is the core fundamental hygiene of our product needed work without adding new features and functionality. So that's this is the information from all of you that I've talked to, or my, that I was able to synthesize back and put a, and drive a decision framework. And this is the reason as to why you can actually see that more and more of our usability bugs are getting addressed, more and more of our stability bugs are getting addressed. We are investing in to make sure that these are scale. And one of the things that came out very early on was upgrade was also a big problem, and we decided to focus on that. And the far right of the screen, you can actually see partner dependencies as 2% as an example of dissat. Not many people were complaining about that, and I thought I'll take advantage of the partner ecosystem that's helping us to give us the float while I have the luxury of going back and fixing on the core fundamentals in terms of reliability as well as performance scale. And that's what you see us going forward, continue to go back and do that. When I created this plan in around September of 2013, I asked my management 6 URs to go clean the, flush out all the backlog, and that's the plan that we're executing against, and I'll show that to you in a second. And once those URs and the backlogs have been cleaned up, we have an opportunity to now reemerge and look for areas where we can actually go do new feature work or new scenarios that we have not, what the customers are telling us. And until then, it's going to be the backlog cleanup that's the focus. This is another one that I've not shared with many people before, but I thought we also collect a lot of data. If you have used Service Manager or any Microsoft product, if you go through the installation process, you'll see that there is something called Customer Experience Program. And it's an opt-in. And when you do that, when this is opted in, it sends non-PII. Non-PII means no personal information is sent, but some very critical performance characteristics of the data as to what scenarios are enabled are communicated back to Microsoft. And this is particularly interesting. When I go look at the data, Service Manager has a lot of footprint, a lot of scenarios. But two scenarios continue to pop up, and they have maintained their percentage ratio over the last 3 years. So if you see us continuously go back and invest in incident management and within the usability scenarios and not too much on, let's say, release management, here's the reason why. Many 85% or more installations continue to go back and use these two primary scenarios for us, right? This is what I meant by data-driven. Earlier I said we are agile, we're going to be transparent, and we are metrics-driven. This is an example, the last few slides, this is an example of the data that we have, a very rigorous method of going back and talking to the customers, looking at the data, helping the data guide our decisions, circling it back to the community and say, hey, this is what I hear, this is what I see, am I right? Should I course correct? This is another example of that. This is instrumented data. There are no people involved here. The data is, this is collected data is telling us that majority, if you add them all up, it's close to 90+%, 90 if not more, year over year. The only thing new that you need to see here is in the year 2014, service catalog is inching up and incident management, they use, and these are all relative percentages, so because they topped 100. So, but pretty much this pattern remains the same. Okay, so I thought this is something that's interesting for you guys to know, and that's how you'll at least see us over the next few years continue to invest in these areas, and you see some of these usability and the earlier ones that I showed about usability, reliability, and performance and scale continue to be impacted by these scenarios. In September, October last year, I said, okay, I needed 5 to 6 URs to go flush the backlog. This was the kind of plan, and at that point in time, I wanted to invest both in SP1 and in 2012. So that's a high-level plan. The management blessed and resourced it. Now, what happens is, then we released, the first UR that we released was on April 22nd, which had both SP1 and UR2, one of the biggest releases that we had since we regenerated on the interest in this product. And the rest, as you can see, we are showing up in a rhythm, July, October, and January. But if you see the top line of this SP1 track, we decided to skip. Two reasons. I'll show that later on. If not, I don't know if it's in the next slide. I'll show this slide and get back to that. If you see this slide here, it's again an example of a metrics-driven system that we have pivoted to. The line, the black line that shows here, I'll explain this x-axis first. The x-axis here represents the days post-launch of a UR. All of you go download the URs, you apply your patches, we track all those things, but this one is going to show you on a certain day, we released UR4. And you can see the graph, the black line, take a long time. It actually took 4 quarters to reach and stabilize. And that was the SP1 line. But at the same time, when you actually go look at the R2 UR2 and the R2 UR3, an example of a faster cadence, as we continue to engage the community, as we continue to go back and give fixes, the community responded by taking it in faster and faster rate. You see the first doubling in terms of the adoption rate occurred in the red line. We were able to reach a stable point, a much northern, it is a much higher stable point than the SP1 install base at twice the speed. And the green one shows the UR3 that was released in July 29th. And that got adopted even faster. So by the end of the quarter, 90 days post the release, it has already reached out its saturation point, and we are getting ready for the next UR. The UR4 was released 2 days ago, and hopefully it'll have the same amount of velocity in adoption. This is an example where when we, if we continue to engage with our community, go back and address fixes that are critical to the community is responding back by saying, yep, I can take it. Remember early on we said upgrade was a challenge. We made that as a first priority, and this is the benefit of that. When you do update your patches today, you're a little bit more safer because we have invested in this. Our SM Agile Tap partners have tested those. They have given you the benefit of early testing. And the sum of all these, the aggregate of all these things is you see some positive momentum here. So I'm going to go back. So when you see that trend, it was, I also tracked so many other metrics on SP1. It became very clear that the install base of SP1 and their and their ability to go back and adopt the SP1 patches was also declining. So I had to make a choice whether to continue to invest in SP1 and 2012 or just do 2012. And it was, the data was very clear to me that if I want to spend that resource, spend it on 2012 because the install base is here and the adoption path is here. I did actually go to TechEd Houston. I told them that I have a dilemma. My recommendation is not to SP1, and pretty much many of them agreed. And the data continued to reinforce, so we made the decision not to show up in July and October. We'll continue to watch that. Again, we are going to be extremely flexible. We're going to be data-driven. If you want to go back and do another SP1 UR, we are willing to do that. So far, the data hasn't shown. But SMUR2, as you probably see, there's a lot of appetite for that. So we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to show up on this rhythm. So we have UR4 out this week as the TechEd happens. I don't have the numbers yet. I'm hoping it'll follow the same trajectory. And then we already have UR5 planned. Very quickly, if you actually see usability continues to be our focus, reliability continues to be a focus, that's going to be the theme. Where possible, we're going to go do performance improvements in a UR. And we also have identified scale improvements that we are targeting and in one of the URs. By now, we have very communicated to our management that the URs, you can actually do beyond bug fixes. You can actually do feature improvements and core framework improvements as well, as long as we keep the hygiene and our focus. So I'm very encouraged. So as you can see, UR5 and UR6 are going to have much more significant changes that are coming up based on the fact that we have learned a lot in doing all these things, the UR2 to UR4. What I've learned in this process so far in the last year, it's the most boring stuff that actually matters a lot. Every day you come in, every day you do the backlog, every 2 weeks you show up. You show up in blogs, you show up in Twitter, you show up in our monthly meetings. You prioritize, you deliver your SMTAP, you look for their feedback, you do your URs. That rhythm of business, that's where I think Microsoft is going as well. And we're actually very happy to say that SM was able to be the tip of the arrow in this case as a proof point. And we have already talked about it, but so I'm not going to talk about the graph, but I can tell you this much. In September, if you guys already don't know what EBC means, EBC stands for Executive Briefing Center, where customers actually come and discuss with us in terms of, so all the product team shows up. It's almost a red carpet welcome for the customer. It's a very exclusive. These customers have now started to come back and communicate what they know and what they perceive of the product and what they have done here. And one of the nice things that I heard this time around was the ecosystem confidence was flowing into the customers, and customers were voicing their approval. So that was very nice to hear. So with this set, the question is what's next? What's coming? How fast? What's not coming? What's still in planning? And I think that's the most difficult as well as important questions for us to share. The most immediate thing that if you see the red arrow, we are in the time frame between UR4 and UR5. UR4 has already happened. UR5 is already in planning. Those are things that are going to happen. UR6 is going to happen the same cadence. It will show up in April. So to that extent, I can plan, and we've already done that. What's the content? One of the first things that we are doing is to make sure that if you're not already know about it, we do have a vNext. It was announced in different sessions throughout TechEd. Both Windows Server vNext as well as System Center vNext. So we will be supporting them. Today, Service Manager does not support SQL 2014. It will support that. Today, we also do not support the Office 2013 suite of products that includes Link, SharePoint. We will be supporting that as well. And we are also targeting some performance and scale improvements that's already in design based on the fabric of what needs to be done from a planning from last year. It's a scheduling thing, and that's coming in. And lastly, one particular bug has been plaguing service managers since it was released. We internally call it write collision. The best way for you to experience this is when you create an incident, some kind of a workload runs, and then you actually come back and forces you to close the dialog box, re-enter the data. It's very annoying. We really want to fix that, but it's an architectural change. We've been putting it off, but now we believe that we have the confidence necessary to actually go engage in that architectural change without breaking the schema or backward compatibility. So we are able to. That's very important to preserve the existing back compat, and I think we have that. So that's already in the scheme of things that we want to go and address. And when this is done, it will make usability really, really better than where it is today. It's one of those really bad things that we need to get it. There are a few aspirational improvements. While I talk about performance, the area that we really want to go solve is also the scale. If you don't know the limitations of a product today, it has a single point, one workflow server, which actually limits the ability to scale, and that's an area that we have identified to work. We are an automation. I earlier talked about in order to succeed, we need an automation. We have a SCO connector or an orchestrator connector. We are still thinking about how to enable the next generation of automation connector, which is called Azure Automation. It was in the planning phases, and I had to cut it because I had to take the resources and put it elsewhere. That's in the list, but we don't know when. And lastly, customers have already complained many, many, many times over that data warehouse is very, very difficult to manage. And that is in the pipeline, and we want to do that. And the story in which these improvements may come out may be slightly different. Maybe a cloud attach might kick in. But that's post UR5 conversations. Because until UR5, we are fairly certain what we want to do. These are post UR5 conversations. There are still planning areas that we have not locked down. One of the most important thing is the self-service portal. And this has been a very difficult one to lock down. We initially wanted to go and line ourselves with the cloud and enterprise version of the self-service experience framework. It's currently called VAP, if you don't know. It's a HTML5, new form factor, supports multiple form factors, new technologies. Much, much better than the Silverlight portal that we have today. But unfortunately, the moment we made a decision to pivot on that, that stack itself started changing, so it introduced new uncertainties, so we are still not locked down this one. Lastly, the areas that are still in planning is when will we release service management as a service, and that hasn't been locked down as well. Cloud-first, mobile-first world, it's a Microsoft pivot. Everything including service manager needs to figure out a way to land in these two broad areas, and this is still a work in progress, and we have not made any decisions, and hopefully, just like 2013, we enter into a period of planning. We might most likely exit out with some decisions probably early next year, and that's my hope. I'm not going to spend too much time. I've already talked about these things. We have a lot of, with 65-plus members in the TAP already, with 104 total entries. I've already approved them, but they are going through the paperwork. So if this conversation was happening maybe next week or the week after, this number would be very different. Very vibrant community. They are the ones who are getting the bits every 2 weeks, every two TAP Thursday bits. They are the ones who are testing, giving us feedback, very deep touch partnership with the product team. We also have monthly TAP calls, north of 150 people show up, steadily rising. And you don't have to be a member of TAP or anything. This is just a community for people, service manager users to come and talk, product team representations, subject matter experts, all of them. 17 of subject matter experts identified within Microsoft, a sizable portion of them show up every month in these calls to answer questions. Twitter, LinkedIn, blogs, we also support books. We write books, we help others write books. A lot of work here. One of the things that the service manager team did was also open up product feedback, so you can actually go back and submit recommendations or fixes, and we actually review them every week, and we show them every month back to the community to say, this is what we have reviewed so far, you further prioritize, and it's a very closed loop here. So, the impact, the ecosystem confidence, the engagement, all these things are very useful. It's flowing to the customers. It's delayed gratification after 6, 7 months, 8 months of this effort. Customers show up in EBC on, without asking, they voice their approval. This is a signal that this is something is right here. So we'll continue to go back and emphasize these areas. So with that said, the topic of the one area that I'm very passionate about is how do we take our customers from the current environment, help them into the new cloud innovation that's happening. Hybrid is our, I think hybrid is absolutely a must. Service management plays an important role in this hybrid journey. So Patrick will be the first person to show a demo. I talked about a couple of things. Hybrid is important. Service manager management plays a very big role in that. More importantly, within service manager, we are heavily dependent on our ecosystem, and that includes our partners. So today, Patrick and I have been working for 2+ years now on different scenarios. He's going to do a demo and talk about his vision of how he's taking service manager but fitting into our cloud story. Patrick?
Thank you, Srikant. So, as Srikant said, we're going to talk about how GridPro is bringing ITSM to the hybrid cloud story. So even though you go to a cloud infrastructure, you still need to be in control, you need to have governance and auditing, etc. So what I want to show you is actually something that Srikant mentioned just a few minutes ago. We've actually implemented a self-service portal experience using the capabilities from Service Manager into the Windows Azure Pack portal. We've also actually gone ahead and created our own SMA connector, which is going to get some Azure automation capabilities later on. So if you want to use it already today, we have that stuff. I'm going to switch over to my monitor here, and we're going to, here we go, have a look into the Service Manager console. So we're actually seeing a request offering called Request Virtual Machine. So I just briefly wanted to show you guys that. So I have my title there. I have some questions defined. Someone will get asked for a purpose of a virtual machine, and there's a few additional things there. I'm going to use that stuff, surface it inside of the Windows Azure Pack portal. So if you haven't seen that before, I urge you to go and look at it, because it's an awesome platform. This is actually the Azure, but let me just refer to Windows Azure Pack first. Windows Azure Pack is taking the bits from Azure, allowing you to run it on-prem. So ISVs like us can plug in extra functionality to that platform and just give you a reliable platform that will extend over time. You can have one portal with a tons of functionality going forth. So remember the Azure portal here. I'm going to switch over to Windows Azure Pack. I've styled it a little. And now you see that I have something called SQL Server Databases. That's an out-of-the-box functionality that you get with Windows Azure Pack. So I'm logged on as an IT user that has access to go and administrate some databases. But most important is that you can see requests and activities, and those are the capabilities that we now bring into Windows Azure Pack. So in here, I can actually track my tickets that I created in System Center Service Manager from the Windows Azure Pack portal. This also brings some additional capabilities to the self-service experience for Service Manager. Since Windows Azure Pack can do claims-based authentication, you no longer have to have AD accounts for users logging to the self-service portal. And we're honoring the full capabilities of the service catalog. So now when I go new, request, create request, you can see all the content coming from the service catalog in Service Manager. And there we have the request virtual machine. So in this case, I am logged on as Trevor, and I need a new virtual machine. And I click next, because that's the offering I'm looking for. I need to answer the question, what's the purpose of the machine? And it's going to be for development this time. A lot of these questions you would probably have pre-configured for your users. But for the purpose of this demo, I'm actually going to allow the user to enter a name for this machine. I'm going to choose to enable backup for the machine. And I come to the confirmation page, and I click Submit. So we can now track that new ticket inside of Windows Azure Pack. And we can see the questions and answers that was shown in the wizard. You can also see the actual activities that are a part of this request. So there's a review activity first, and I mean all of this is defined in System Center Service Manager. We have our service request template hooked up to that request offering that I showed you in the beginning inside of Service Manager. So the process is defined there. We're just using all of that configuration now available to us inside of Windows Azure Pack. So a approval needs to take place because that would be the first activity to come in progress. So here we have that. I'm going to switch over to the actual approver's view of this. But first, let me just show you. This is in Azure. There are no virtual machines, so keep that in mind. We switch over to Math's session, and he has now a review activity. Preferably, Service Manager would send out a notification email, of course, to the reviewer, and he would go in here and review the request. And he's going to approve this. Let's see, so I just picked the right one. Yeah, here we go. So before I go and approve this, I want to know about the details of the request, so I will check the parent work item here. In here we have the description of the review activity, service request, and all the questions and answers that was entered by Trevor during the request. I'm going to choose to approve this. Now, what I've chosen to do is if someone goes and requests a development machine, instead of provisioning that on premises, I'm actually going to use our SMA connector in Service Manager. So here we have that, where we've actually pulled in PowerShell workflow runbooks into Service Manager, and we're allowing you to go and create activities from those exactly the same way as you can do with Orchestrator runbooks today. So I'm going to use one of those runbooks, fire that off, and it's going to go and create that developer machine in Azure instead. So let's just have a quick look inside of Windows Azure Pack again. In here, you can actually monitor your SMA runbooks, Service Management Automation runbooks. We should see a new job showing up here any second. And while we're waiting for that, what I wanted to state is that with Windows Azure Pack, you're now able to work with your infrastructure as a cloud on-prem. You get the same experience as the public cloud, but still, we want you to be able to do your ITSM processes for those resources. So that's why we are bringing the capabilities from the service catalog and Service Manager into that experience. So we now have a new job running there, so which means there will be a virtual machine popping up here any second now. And as I said, we're using the SMA connector for Service Manager that is already on market. We released that 2 weeks ago. The Windows Azure Pack self-service portal experience was released in March. It's actually included when you go and install Windows Azure Pack yourself today. We're bundled with the installation experience that comes from Microsoft for the out-of-the-box bits. And there we have the virtual machine created in Azure using the new capabilities. Now, when you've done this, of course, you want to move on with the other ITSM processes like asset management. And this is something that I'm going to hand over to our partner, Gord, to take further. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Good. Do you want to speak to any of these
So just
resources?
For more information, go to gridprosoftware.com. And also, we have a partnership with Provence. I'm sure Gord is going to mention that again. Go for the suite at systemcentersolutionstore.com. Thank you.
Okay, so the demonstration that Patrick just provided to you is really just the beginning. So we've requested a virtual machine. We provisioned that using GridPro request management in Azure. But it's also desirable for us to be able to maintain visibility and to continue to manage that virtual machine asset as well as all of the others that may be deployed in our hybrid cloud environment. So what we want to do, ideally, is bring information about all of these cloud-deployed assets and services into one place where we have visibility and a central point of control. And according to IT management best practice frameworks like ITIL or MOTH, the Microsoft Operations Framework, that single source of truth should be a configuration management database, a CMDB. And one of the very powerful pieces of functionality in Service Manager is a centralized CMDB, which is integrated very tightly with the remainder of the System Center products. So what we want to do is to be able to bring that configuration information from all of our different hybrid cloud environments into the CMDB. In the case of our private clouds that are deployed on-prem or are hosted for us, that's fairly straightforward because we can take advantage of the out-of-the-box Service Manager connectors to Operations Manager and to Configuration Manager to bring that information in. However, when we start talking about public cloud services like Azure, which is a platform as a service, we can't really deploy those kinds of monitoring clients. So how do we get that information back? Well, there is data that I guarantee you will get with great punctuality and scrupulous accuracy from public cloud environments. Anybody want to guess what that is? Get a bill, right? You're invoiced for those services that you're provided with. So we're going to take advantage of that billing information. Let me just go back here because I think my first slide. We're going to take advantage of the fact that there's an IT management discipline which allows you to manage contract information like Azure subscriptions and cost information. And we're going to use the IT asset management capabilities that Provence has delivered into Service Manager to make sure we're maintaining visibility of our cloud environment across all of these different deployments. So I'll switch to demonstration now. And I'm actually going to start my demo in my browser. So if I go to azure.microsoft.com, this is the landing page that I'll land on. And if I select the My Account menu option, you'll see that I'm prompted to select between the management portal, which is where I would go and manage my Azure services, launch new virtual machines. But I also have the option to go to usage and billing. And by accessing usage and billing and signing into my Azure account, my 3-month free trial has expired, so I'm going to go to my active Windows Azure Microsoft Partner Network account, which Patrick and I are using to build our demonstration today. Go to the summary page, and if I scroll down on the summary page, one of my options is to download usage details. So you can see that on that page, I'm given access to all of my monthly invoices as well as usage information. And if I open up that CSV file, you can see that I'm provided with a couple of things. So this is the monthly invoice and usage statement that I received from Azure. It shows me an itemized monthly line item billing for the different kinds of Azure services that I'm consuming, so data, storage, networking, and compute hours. And it also provides me with a daily summary of all of the specific consumption, Azure consumption services that I've incurred through my Azure subscription. So we're going to take advantage of that in Service Manager to maintain visibility and to manage the assets across the entire lifecycle. So we've provisioned our development machine in Azure. Patrick's just shown you that through the GridPro request management portal. We're going to pick up where he left off inside of Service Manager and see that asset through the remainder of its life. So to do that, I'm going to switch to my Service Manager console. So Provence collaborated with Microsoft back when Service Manager was introduced in 2010. We have been an independent software vendor of IT asset management since 1997. This is our 17th year building IT asset management software. And in 2010, we collaborated with Microsoft to bring the same kind of capabilities we were shipping in a standalone application right onto the System Center platform and running natively inside of Service Manager as a process management pack. In fact, Provence developed the very first commercial third-party process management pack for System Center. Now, I'm going to show you the pre-release version of our next major release, which is due before the end of the year, so it could be interesting. This being Halloween, I hope it's a treat and not a trick. So when you install the IT Asset Management Pack, we follow the Microsoft design paradigm of creating workspaces that are dedicated to different kind of activities. So for example, where an IT analyst would work on incidents, change requests in work items, and configuration managers would look at configuration items in the configuration item workspace, we have a dedicated IT asset management workspace for asset managers and software managers. And you can get an idea here of how we've extended the configuration management database with additional classes to track CIs for that finance, physical, and cost information that we're looking to bring in from Azure. So for example, hardware manufacturers, software publishers, service providers, and their contacts. Then we have tracking of your physical locations by a hierarchy of region, country, state, city, and so forth. The cost center organization of your company and departmental structure. And of course, you can see we're tracking finance information like invoices and purchases. In terms of contracts and agreements, again, you get a sense here of the entities we've added to handle the most common type of IT management contracts for hardware and software support, leasing agreements, warranty contracts. And the one we're going to have a look at today is the ability to define contracts that don't fall in that out of the box menu. And you can see that I've added an agreement to track my Windows Azure subscription that I just showed you through my browser. And if I open up that form, you'll see that I'm maintaining the information about the subscription. You can see that Patrick and I are primary users, and I'm also maintaining links to things like the legal terms for services and subscription. So all of that's being managed as a contract. Within the system, and I won't show this today, but I'll just give you an indication of what we do. Software asset management, so in addition to the installed information that Configuration Manager brings into Service Manager, we also build out an entitlement view based on purchases. And based on the information that Configuration Manager is providing about what you've got installed, we're creating a view of what you're entitled to have and present you with a green light, red light, yellow light status indicator to know whether or not you have sufficient licenses to cover your installs or if there's a license shortfall. But today, our main area of interest is in managing computers. And in the new forthcoming release of Provence, we're building an enterprise-scale version of our IT asset management solution to match the performance and scalability enhancements that are forthcoming in Service Manager. And one of the main areas of functional improvement is to add support for additional kinds of IT assets. So you can see that we're tracking things like infrastructure, non-serialized, non-owned assets, mobility, bring your own device, and most significantly, we're now tracking virtual machines as a specific class inside of Service Manager. So if I open up my virtual machine asset view, what I've already got in here is information that's coming to me from Operations Manager and Virtual Machine Manager through the connectors in Service Manager. So what I'd like to do is bring that information from Azure, bring in the information about the virtual machine that Patrick just provisioned so that I can see all of those VMs and, in fact, all of my physical assets in one pane of glass. So to do that, I'm going to take advantage of another management pack that Provence provides, our data management pack. It's an extension to the connector framework for CSV import that Microsoft provides out of the box. In addition to CSV files, you could also import information from LDAP sources and Microsoft SQL Server databases. So I'm going to go after that billing file that I've pulled down from Azure. I've already created a template in the interest of time here during the session that I'm going to use. So this is the CSV file that my usage file that I've pulled down from Azure. You can see that I'm previewing five rows of data, and if you were really paying attention when I was showing in my browser, these are the same columns from the usage report. They're in the CSV file that I'm going to pull in. And just by the way, what I've done is I've taken us through a little bit of time travel. I've gone forward in time to show the next 5 days of activity on the virtual machine that Patrick has provisioned. And if I continue along, you'll see that I have a graphical representation here of the template that I built. So one of the ways that this data management pack extends the framework that Microsoft provides for CSV import is we can do import into multiple classes in the CMDB in a single pass. So the main configuration item class that I want to populate is the virtual machine assets. However, that's also tied to a hardware catalog item. And we also want to bring in those specific daily cost events that are incurred against the VM. So those are individual cost events. And of course, I'm relating the virtual machine asset to the subscription that it falls under. And I've built the relationships in the CMDB between the classes. And you can see that I've structured the import from my file with the mapping that I've specified here. So using this tool, what I do is I go in, if I want to copy a field, I just go and pick that up from the headers in the file. So that's what I've done when I built this template. So I'll go back to the import, continue along here. So using that template, you can see that the data management pack is reading the 63 line items that are in that file, all with the itemized billing information. What it's doing is it's mapping properties and classes, building the relationships in the CMDB, and pulling all of that data in. So if I go back to asset management now, and I have a look again at our virtual asset view, you can see that we've added four new VMs into that view we already had based on on-prem monitoring from VMM and from Ops Manager. And here's the dev WS009 machine that Patrick just provisioned. That's running in Azure for our development team. And if I open up that record, you'll see that what I brought in is summary detail about the machine. And if I click to the finance tab here, and I have a look at my individual cost events, here are all the daily charges for compute hours that have accrued against that VM. So it looks deceptively simple, but what we've accomplished here is actually something very, very powerful. Now that we've got this VM in our single source of truth, in our configuration management database, along with our on-prem virtual and physical machines, we can do some very important IT functions. So for example, we can now log incidents and change requests against that VM in Service Manager. I can also do things like assign software licenses. I showed you very briefly our software management. If I have a VM that I'm running in Azure that's running, for example, a SQL Server database to support an application, I'm responsible for that software license. That doesn't come with my Azure subscription. I need to make an assignment out of my software pool to run on that machine. So I think a simple but I think very powerful example of how you can use Service Manager to manage your hybrid cloud environment in some very important and profound ways with a single pane of glass using industry standard configuration management database. I've lost the slide clicker. Here we go. So again, if you're looking for additional information about the Provence solution, as Patrick mentioned, we have a stand in Tech Expo. It's actually the suite where we're partnered with three other partners providing enhancements to Service Manager, so we welcome you to stop by and see us through the final day. Of course, we have the Provence.com website, and you can follow us on social media. Thank you.
Thank you, Gaurd. So when I mentioned earlier, cloud innovation is coming, cloud disruption is coming. It's already here. The question is, how do we all help our customers make the journey? One of the things that we look at in the service management space is the thing that we used to do in an on-prem world, and specifically in the ITSM space, I'm able to go create an incident, make a change. How can I do that consistently across all my assets, which are now spread across multiple clouds? There's some of them on-prem, some of them running on Azure, some of them running in a hosted space. How do we give that consistency of experience for the end user, consistency of experience for the admin who is managing this asset. We just saw God do that. So that's the kind of thinking that goes on. What you saw earlier from a lifecycle standpoint, using Service Manager, using the VAP integration, we're able to go provision a VM. There is a very key element there. So one of the first questions that we did in this example was, what is the function in which you're asking this request for? And the answer was, hey, I want to do it in development. That's a capability in Service Manager to ask some questions using the answers that are provided, make some decisions downstream. And in an example that Patrick did was he took that information that it is in a development, it's a request for development, and made a policy decision, express that policy in the form of, if it's a development resource, I'm going to go and drop this VM in, on Azure. That's an IT admin function trying to now say, I have in my company, if it's a dev and test resources, the most optimal way, cost optimal way, or whatever policy that the IT admin has said, is going to drop this asset on Azure. If there could be another decision that you and I have not exposed to right now is if it's for production, because my compliance regulations mandate that the production VM has customer data and they will actually be on-prem, the same experience will let that particular, without any end user awareness, the end user is still going to go request, and the request could be for a VM, but the function would be for a different purpose other than development, the automation logic would actually drop that VM onto an on-prem cloud. Now, God's solution from Provence will look at it from saying it doesn't matter whether there is in Azure or in on-prem, I have the ability to synthesize all of them and treat them as an asset. We got that all covered. So this is a day one scenario, a day zero scenario, and then there is a day 365 scenario where most of the organization sits in. What is that? VMs can actually go south. They will actually... Now, you might not be able to go back and then access them, and users are going to have all these problems. A Service Manager comes to the rescue here again. An end user can consistently go to the same experience and now raise an incident, and they don't have to know whether they are the asset itself is on Azure, on-prem. It does not matter. The automation, the service management logic will kick in and help you come back and raise an incident or do a change. Whatever is appropriate. So I'm going to ask Patrick really quickly, is it possible that we can do a very quick demo of ability to go back and raise an incident in a very consistent fashion for both an on-prem as well as on Azure?
Absolutely. So let me just switch back to my machine here. So now, since we have information about our VMs back in Service Manager, we can go and manage those in the same way, no matter if they are on-prem or off-prem, as Srikant is saying here. So again, I'm going to use my capabilities from System Center Service Manager inside of Windows Azure Pack. And I'm going to go request, create request. I'm going to go for a virtual machine incident, which is another offering in the service catalog that I created. I'm going to specify a problem. Machine will not start. Urgency high. Some alternative contact information. IT problems. And I'm going to select my machine. So I'm going to search for the dev VS009, which is placed up in Azure. So I was actually querying the CMDB of Service Manager for resources, where I have both on-prem and off-prem resources. And I'm going to fire that off. Then that has now raised a new ticket inside of Service Manager. Here we go. And now I'm actually able to track the progress of this incident. I'm going to be able to communicate with my service desk. Please hurry up. And this way we can get a dialogue going with the service desk. When they answer back, it will be a call out coming out from the right-hand side, and hopefully they will get this
so
solved
this,
very soon.
This is an example where I look at it from hybrid cloud. The end user, if IT is as a service, the end user does not have to know where the policies of IT decided to place the asset on, and they are blissfully unaware of all these other things that are going on. And that's probably an IT function. The right IT function is to abstract all these things. And that's how we think about when we talk about hybrid cloud, how do we get ITSM functionality into the space. And the comfortness that you can get, that I can actually go and operate the same way, brings a set of flexibility too. Tomorrow, the IT might decide to move all the assets to Azure, and still nobody needs to know. Right, the person can continually engage the same way. And that's how I want us to go back and say, we're going to think about helping our customers make the journey. So thank you, Gord. Thank you, Patrick. So that concludes our demo sessions. So I just want to go back and say, cloud first, mobile first, our CEO, Microsoft, has consistently made that as a mantra for us. We continue to think about that. Within that, hybrid is the reality. We continue to go back and think about how do we enable our existing customers use the hybrid. And lastly, the way we think about it is service management is very key for cloud scenarios, because it gives the ability for the IT org to have a sense of control and provide the sense of familiarity. And then that's how we are going to go look at how to advance these things. At least service manager in particular has a lot of challenges. We started this year with a certain set of rules for ourselves. We want to focus on usability. We want to focus on stability and perf. And until we gain that enterprise readiness in those three areas, we are not going to go back and look at new areas for investment. That's number one. And that's where you'll see most of us showing up again and again. We also wanted to do that through a faster cadence. You already saw some evidence of that, and we're going to go keep that until the audience and the customers tell us that it's too fast. The rhythm right now that we have planned out is quarterly, and if you want to get faster and earlier, the only way to get that is through the Agile Tap. I strongly encourage if any of you want to keep in touch with a stronger partnership with our product team, Agile Tap seems to be the best way, because we meet very, very often and in a very scalable way. Lastly, the next set of innovations that you most likely will see are on the peripheries, where we can definitely do a cloud attach. And you saw some examples today. Some of our partners are actually delivering their cloud attached innovations even today, even before Microsoft can actually deliver it as a first party offering. We rely on our partners to do that, and they're actually been delivering it for about a year already. Lastly, it's an ecosystem of partners. Even though I say partners, it's a whole bunch of people that we rely on, MVPs, ISVs, all of us. And this is my short way of saying partners, but it represents the collective ecosystem. So that's all I wanted to share. The key takeaway is, again, we continue to show up. You'll see us, and the best way to engage with us through blogs, through Twitter, SMTAP, link up calls. All these things are public. I strongly encourage you guys to, we are listening. We are not only listening, we are actively taking your feedback. We're putting it in action. We're sharing it back with you. I want you to take advantage of that. And that's the part of the thing that I like about being in this particular thing, is the innovations that we brought into the engaging the community, and the feedback and the faster cadence is actually working. Hopefully next year it'll be much faster. So thank you, everybody, and I'm going to hang around here for a little bit more questions. But before that, if you have certain things, these are all areas you can share some feedback. Thank you.